Hi there, Vet Blast podcast listeners. Missed out on Fetch this year or looking to revisit your favorite sessions? You are in luck. Fetch On Demand is here to bring you practical, real-world, continuing education anytime, anywhere. No matter your schedule, you can access expertly curated content that's designated to meet the challenges you face every day in your clinic. From cutting-edge medical insights to hands-on practice tips, Fetch On Demand is your ultimate resource for staying at the forefront of veterinarian medicine. So what are you waiting for? Visit dvm360events.com, click on Demand, and start learning at your pace today. Fetch On Demand, education without limits.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. Clinical empathy. Do you know what that means? Do you know the definition of it? Are you actually practicing clinical empathy? And do you believe it's an essential part of veterinary medicine? Well, I got the perfect guy to chat with us about it. We got the one and only. I'm laughing because he's such a great friend and a great guy, Dr. Joshua Rosen, or Dr. Josh as he goes by. Thanks for being here, my friend.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I know that we'll put his social media handles in the chat, but if you're following him at all on TikTok at underscore Dr. Josh or Instagram Dr. Josh, you know that he does this incredible work about clinical empathy, and he does it in a really cool and innovative way using his drone. And I'll let him explain the rest. But I just think it's great, and I wanted to get him on the show to chat with our listeners about this because it's great education. And so some a little bit more information about our friend. He's a traveling relief veterinarian who's passionate about bringing clinical empathy and effective communication to every exam room. With years of experience working in diverse hospitals, Dr. Josh has firsthand on connecting with pet parents and the veterinary teams who serve them leads to better patient care and healthier work environments. Through his social media presence, and he educates both veterinary professionals and pet parents on how communication and compassion can transform the veterinary experience, whether it's coaching veterinarians on reflective listening, helping clients understand their pet's care plan, or encouraging teams to create more supportive workplaces. Dr. Josh is on a mission to make veterinary medicine more human, one conversation at a time. I love that. When he's not in clinic, you can find him exploring new cities on his travels, hanging out with his beagles, Molly and Cora, or creating relatable vet med content that reminds us of all why we love this wonderful profession. Did you always grow up with beagles, by the way, or did they happen to come into your life?
They definitely just came into my life. I will say I had a favorite dog breed like as a child, and it was a beagle, and so I think I attracted them into my life. But yes. I don't know that I'll ever not own a beagle, for sure.
They're incredible. I grew up with beagles too. That's why I asked. And my first dog on my own was a beagle named Charles, and they're just unbelievable dogs. They really are. I love them so much. So shout out to all the beagle parents out there. Okay. So we chatted just earlier about clinical empathy. So that's kind of, if you don't mind, maybe defining a little bit of what that means and what does it mean to you and why do you believe it's such an essential part of our profession?
I think that is a really great place to start. You know, when we talk about clinical empathy, I think that there are three really big parts that are easy to break down. The first is basically understanding what that pet parent's perspective is while keeping a professional objectivity to the situation. And so another way of saying that is understanding and acknowledging pet parents' emotions and concerns. You really want to be able to build trust, and using these skills helps to do exactly that, improves compliance, leading to better patient outcomes because of that. You know, veterinary medicine is about treating both the pet and the pet parent in the sense of maintaining that human-animal bond. The more that we can reduce stress for clients and veterinary teams, the more sustainable of a career it really ends up being for us as well.
Yeah, and I think when you're talking about like eliciting the pet parent's perspective on things, it puts things into perspective and understanding how we go about practicing. And I always say, like, we're at the end of the day, we're also pet parents too. So how would you want to be treated when you're getting faced with difficult, challenging, diagnostics or even a diagnosis. So I think it's great that you really put this front and center.
That's exactly right. And you also have situations where we are all empathetic people, right? Like, we're all compassionate people in this field. There's no question about that. I think that you really can't be passionate about veterinary medicine without having the compassion that comes with it. We all can relate to being that pet parent, right? Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes where we miss is we don't recognize that even though we have that passion and we have that compassion, we're not necessarily communicating it in the most effective manner. And that's a big miss because we have so much to give. So if our pet parents don't know how compassionate we are, we're really missing out on how much trust and connection that can be developed. So you can tell I'm obviously passionate about this, but the main thing being that the more that we can build that connection, the more that we get exactly what we want out of these pet visits, getting them the care that they need.
Just exactly what you said, building that connection establishes trust, where we know that there's studies show when you have that trust that's established, they will more likely comply to your recommendations and consent to treatment. And yep. I mean, what I just said sounds so easy, but to your point, it takes time. And my question to you is, sometimes people worry that, oh my gosh, this takes so much time in a busy clinical setting. I don't have time for, working with empathy. But what would you say to those veterinarians and technicians out there who feel that way?
I would ask, do you have 40 seconds? Because there's a study, and it's not in veterinary medicine, it's in human medicine, but we're talking about really, really important stuff in the study. This is a study about communication in oncology departments in human medicine, and that being able to take 40 seconds to communicate that you're feeling, that you're empathizing with what that client is going through with their pet in that situation, getting really bad news or something along those lines. 40 seconds is all it takes to create connection that lasts a lifetime, that lasts the treatment course, that lasts the outcome that you're looking for. So basically all I mean by that is what are some examples of things that you can fill into that 40 seconds? Well, you can say their name. You can talk to them like they are a human being that just brought their pet into you and not just another client that walked in the door. Every client that I speak to when they come into my room, obviously if I know them, it's a little bit different intro, but if I'm just meeting them for the first time, even if they've been to my clinic before, I'm going to introduce myself right away and I'm going to give them a second or two. But if they don't tell me their name, I'm just going to say to them like, oh, it's a pleasure to meet Fluffy. Any chance I could get your name as well? Or what can I call you? Like, make a joke out of it, There's so many different ways that you can take just an extra 40 seconds to communicate. I see you as a person. I see you as someone that I could be in another situation, and I don't want, or I want to make sure that you have that connection with me.
Yeah. Can you elaborate or maybe provide an example to the listeners where, practicing clinical empathy made a real difference on, say, maybe it's a client or is it a patient or a team member?
Absolutely. One situation that really comes to mind is a scenario where a pet was presenting complaint for seizures. And when the intake was done, the assistant had come to me and talked to me about how the client had noticed that the pet was convulsing on the floor. They were on their back and they were shaking significantly, and they maybe even vocalized a little bit at one point in time. They didn't urinate or defecate, but they were very concerned because it happened yesterday, and then it also happened a few days prior to that. When I went into the room and I saw this dog, I noticed that the skin had some evidence of a skin infection present, and that there were some collarettes kind of seen throughout the top of the back, dorsum. When I saw that, immediately I'm thinking to myself, I kind of had a little bit of a thought in the back of my head already, but maybe this isn't seizures. And we're going to just take an extra second to talk a little bit more about this history, because I kind of have the hairs up on the back of my neck. Just talk to them about, is there any chance that when these events were happening, you were able to call out their name and see that they respond to you? And, oh, yeah, as soon as I called out Fluffy, they stopped what they were doing and they came over to me. I'm like, okay. any other instances of weird behavior? And specifically go into detail about this event where they're laying on the ground and shaking, is that they're describing their pet having a really hard time scratching and feeling really, really itchy. And eventually, during the exam itself, the dog actually did it in the room with us. Then the pet parent said, "Oh yeah, that's it right there, what they're doing right now." I was able to get that information out from them because I was able to say to myself, "Is this something that I need to just take at first hand, or is this something that we need to investigate further?" Don't get me wrong, we still talked about seizures, we talked about the risks of them, and that it's still something that they needed to monitor for. But part of what I guess I missed in that is that because I'm entering the room, introducing myself, making sure that they know me very well, or feel like they have a connection with me, this pet parent felt comfortable saying to me in more detail, like, "Oh, that's it right there, that's going on in front of us. That's the event that's happening at home. Yes, I am able to introduce or interrupt them during the behavior." This is a situation where it would have been very easy to go into that room with a little bit of judgment that they didn't know that their dog was itchy and that it wasn't a seizure, right? And that is something that can happen subconsciously that we don't even recognize we're doing in the moment because we're so into, the structure of we need to get in, we need to get out, we need to move on to the next case, that we can accidentally communicate to that client that, "How did you not know that this was itchiness? Like, this isn't a seizure." And then we don't get to do the things that we need to do for that pet. We miss out on the opportunity to say, "You know what? We could benefit from doing a full workup for seizures, but I do think that addressing the skin infection may very well help with this itchiness significantly." So we can kind of break this up into two parts. Let's deal with what we know now and focus on that workup. And if we want to continue the workup for seizures because we still feel like this behavior is occurring and there's new things that pop up over the next several weeks, we'll talk about it. But I'm not putting them in the position to feel that they need to defend why they're coming in, which is something that I think can happen very easily, just simply by not communicating directly, not communicating the things that we're feeling in a certain situation. It's a very roundabout way to talk about that. I hope that gave a good
No,
enough example.
it's a really good example, and as you're talking, I was thinking, I know some people feel that, oh my gosh, this just feels exhausting and like soul crushing on me if I'm working a 12-hour day and I'm gonna burn out from something like this. So what would you say to those, or what are some practical ways actually that, we as veterinary professionals can start incorporating clinical empathy into our daily appointments, but we don't want to burn out at the same time?
I think that being able to understand where you can go wrong with empathy is kind of going right back to that definition and understanding that the goal is understanding their perspective and communicating it, but it's not to put yourself in their, or excuse me, it's not to take their feelings and burden yourself with it. So I often will talk about understanding the differences between sympathy and empathy, or sympathy and compassion, depending on who you talk about or talk with. If somebody's trapped underneath a car, you're not going to help them out by putting yourself underneath a car as well. You need to go over there and help them out, help them get out of that car. You're not going to help them if you don't understand how dangerous the situation is. You're not going to let them know that you're going to help them if you don't understand how dangerous the situation is. So you need to be able to differentiate that in trying to practice these skills to start, is that I'm not necessarily asking for you to sympathize. I'm asking for you to understand so that you can communicate that compassion that you have. The second part is to say practical is what are go-tos that I have in these situations? I will say it until I'm blue in the face. Say their name. Say the pet parent's name. Say the pet's name. Use names in every interaction you have. It doesn't have to just stop with the client and the pet. Talk to your team with their names. Every single person on this planet loves to hear their name said. It's not something that's personal or preferential. This is an actual chemical reaction happening in your brain every single time you hear someone call your name, almost as a reward. So why not use that to your advantage? Go-to empathy phrases, you know, I don't really like to have scripts in these situations because it can be very easy for people to feel misled if they think you're just saying a phrase. But being able to see what their pain points are in every interaction you can gives you those empathy phrases to use. So you have a pet that comes in with diarrhea, you know, if it's been having frequent episodes, you probably know that pet parent has been up all night, and why not talk about it? What's the worst case scenario? You're wrong? Then you can joke about being wrong. Like, it's simply just having a conversation initially that lets them feel connected with you. But if you're able to say like, oh, that really sucked that you stayed up all night having to let them out every hour, like, they're going to really appreciate you for taking an extra second to mention that. Same thing goes for itchy dogs, you know, dogs that maybe they came in really, really ill, and you can tell that the pet parent is just genuinely concerned for the prognosis of their pet. You know, you don't have to tell them that everything's going to be okay if you don't know yet, but you can say to them, hey, I'm here right now and I'm here to support you. So please let me know what I can do to help you. I'm going to get you every piece of information as it comes along the way. You know, setting boundaries, I think that, you know, that kind of just goes back to the beginning of what I was saying before, being able to really distinguish the difference between sympathy and compassion or sympathy and empathy. And then when we're talking about the burnout, the burden, you often talk about clients that come in that have multiple concerns because they have been waiting the last 6 months to bring their pet in, and there haven't really been any urgent concerns, and they have their annual, so might as well get it all done in one shot. You're never going to change that mentality in that pet parent. So it's to say, don't take that burden onto yourself. It's okay that they're doing this, and they're going to probably continue doing it every year, but you have the power to say, we have a lot going on today with Buddy. I can definitely appreciate that you're concerned about X, Y, and Z. What's your biggest concern today? What do we want to address right now so that we can prioritize that, spend our efforts on that, and then we can come back in a week or two and focus on the next problem. Being able to understand what's in your control really does help set the standard for how you use these skills and not overextend yourself, not take that burden home with you where it doesn't belong.
I love that you mentioned that, because setting that boundary with these dogs and cats that are coming in with multiple comorbidities, for instance, and it can really make you, you know, lose your mind, you know, and I love that you said, you know, what are we expecting to achieve? Because that way you're aligned with the client in the exam room too. And I even take it one step further. So they know that the time that was booked is a boundary. So what are we looking to achieve in the 30 minutes that we have together today? Because they think that they can have an hour with you to go over everything. And you don't, as much as, and I'm a chatty guy too in the exam room. I love talking to some pet parents. Oh, it's my blessing and a curse. I love it. But I know that I have to keep the ball rolling too. And so I think me saying it out loud, just like saying a name, also helps me realize like, okay, we're on like a time constraint here. This isn't just the only patient that I have today. I have others. So I love that you shared that. The other thing I was thinking when you were talking about is reading the room. You know, when they've been up all night cleaning up vomit or diarrhea, or the dog's been itching. And then you go in and you're like, hey, how are you? Like, read a room. Like, you know that they're frustrated.
You know how they are. Yeah.
Right? Because they're going to be coming back at you. And then you'd be like, oh, what's up there? Why are they so mad at me? Or they seem frustrated. Well, I would be too if my dog was vomiting all night and I came in. And then you're like, how are you? So good to see you. Like, that's not the vibe. So,
yep. Like I don't mean to let you down, Doc, but I'm not happy to see you.
Yeah. Yeah, like I'm mad, I'm angry, I'm frustrated. Yeah. Like, and they're allowed to be. And
they versus are
us be like, oh, okay. And I've seen that happen when I was a veterinarian. I was like, oof, it's a little cringeworthy because you gotta be able to like read your clients a little bit. So when you're saying like I don't really have scripts, I agree with you because it's not a one size fits all with clinical empathy, but it's a little bit of using your intuition, losing your soft skills like you're talking about. So really, really powerful stuff you're chatting about. So I'm,
being willing to make mistakes, right? Like you have to be
yes.
able to practice it. And the only way that's going to happen is if you make a few mistakes along the way, and that's okay.
Yeah, that is okay. Absolutely okay. And that's why there's other veterinarians around. If you're in a practice or
Yes.
if you're in a multi-doctor practice, you may not be the Noah's Ark. And I say this, listen, I don't want you to be the Noah's Ark. You're not supposed to be for everybody, but you're going to be for those people that get you. And there's other veterinarians that can understand, you know, if the client's just, you're just not vibing with them, that's okay. Don't take it personal. You know, they just have a connection for somebody else. And that's the beauty behind the word practice. You know?
Absolutely. I've def you know, it's fun to talk about these things because it definitely can give a different impression sometimes. I absolutely have some clients that have a note on that says, "Don't see Dr. Rosen." Like it will happen sometimes. And
Yeah.
when people tell me, or if it's to say that like I used to be a medical director and I'd have an associate working with me, that's I can't believe that they said that they never want to see me again. And it's like, that's okay. Like
Yeah.
they are a human being and they are
Yes.
allowed to have preferences. Also, I can guarantee you that if there is a problem with their pet and you're the only one here that day, that's going to change a little bit. And you have to recognize that that's okay too. And that
Right.
it's not just like everything isn't black and white absolute every day, right?
Yeah. And in a multi-doctor practice, we would have these doctors' meetings that we chatted about because the clients would be like, oh, where's Dr. Josh? I need to see him. And we always are aligned with this. And to the listeners, take this soundbite because this is a really good one. And we always are said, they are all of our patients at ABC Animal Hospital. We all, and exactly to your point, like we can work up a Cushing's case. We can work up, you know, some of these ER cases and triage. And just because Dr. Josh isn't available doesn't mean we're going to not deliver great quality medicine. Personalities may be different, but at the end of the day, we're going to achieve the same outcome. And I do think that helps minimize some of that burnout feeling because if you come back from vacation, they say, "Oh my gosh, where were you, Dr. Josh? Oh my gosh, this all happened." I'm like, "Oh, it looks like you got seen by Dr. Adam, and everything looks great." I just think that's so good, closing that circle of communication and just showing that like you're a united front.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And chances are that like if your team is set in being able to focus on communicating empathy in some regard, your team's culture is going to lean in that direction, right? When you go on vacation, you want to feel confident that your patients are going to be taken care of and that you're not going to come back and that, you know, nobody talked to your clients because you weren't there that week. That's crazy, right? Like everybody's on the same team because everybody has the same goal for these patients. Absolutely.
Yeah. And when we talk about empathy, what do you think are some common myths or misunderstandings that may there may be about empathy and vet med that you wish more people would recognize?
I think that the biggest thing that I hear is that it takes too much time. And you know, we talked about before 40 seconds, it really doesn't. But the other part of this is that I think that people don't recognize how much redundancy exists because of poor communication. How many times have we had something, you know, have to be redone or had to redo a treatment plan or have the assistant go back and forth between the exam room and the treatment room because we missed the mark on what we thought the pet parent was aiming for that day as far as their goals are concerned. When we have that connection and when I'm able to really be on the same team with that pet parent in regards to whatever they're presenting for, I'm able to go through my recommendations and I feel confident being present in that room when we review the treatment plan so that I'm here. Let's talk about any struggles that you have so that we make a plan that is best suited for you. The other reason why I'm doing that is so that we aren't inefficient, right? I don't want that time wasted going back and forth and then maybe even exhausting the pet parent to make them eventually feel like it's not worth doing anything. Because that would be the worst case scenario at all. The other thing, too, is that empathy does not mean agreeing. And I think that I probably take that one a little bit too personal sometimes, but the aspect of you don't have to agree with someone in order to empathize for them. In fact, if you don't agree with someone, it may be even more important for you to try to empathize, because clearly you're not understanding their perspective if you think that you're at odds with each other because they disagree with you. If you're feeling as though there's you know, one v one attitude when we're talking about treatment plan presentation, it often is that we're falling into the habit that we can't empathize if we don't agree. And it's just the complete opposite. And if you want that pet parent to buy in, you need to empathize with them if they don't agree. You need to see what that pain point is so that you can meet them halfway.
I feel like sometimes we put value systems on them as well when they can't, or they decline certain services, and exactly agree in the fact that, what is the gold standard these days anymore? You know, I mean, it grinds my gears sometimes when they're like, oh, well, they declined this, they declined the dental, they declined that. And, you know, I this is a great example. A couple of weeks ago, I had a client that declined everything, and we did just the rabies vaccine. And I flipped the script in the sense that, thank you for protecting him against one of the most lethal diseases out there, rabies. You know, the other things we can address, but this is really important. So thank you. And the guy was so happy. I didn't attack him that he didn't do this, that, the other thing. Yes, we talked about recommendations. There was a heart murmur, dental disease, but rabies is really what he wanted to get at the end of the day. And rabies is what he got. Rabies vaccine is what he got for his dog. And we both walked out of there happy, you know?
Yep.
So
can you imagine if you were at a doctor's office and your doctor, like, you left there feeling like your doctor was upset with you because you didn't do something?
Yes. Like,
That is a really true feeling that we can accidentally communicate with pet parents every day if we're not focused on it. And that right there, what you said, is really important. He did do right by his pet by protecting them. And maybe he's not ready to do everything else that was recommended, but he's informed and he got his knowledge from that consult. He got the vaccine that he wanted to get. And he didn't leave feeling like he doesn't have a good relationship with his vet anymore, because that's where he's going to have to go if there's ever an issue. He doesn't want that. It's so important.
So important. So what would be, I like to give listeners a little bit of a homework assignment when we're wrapping up here. And I want listeners, I want you to have a homework assignment by Dr. Josh. What is one small change that they could do to start making today, or that they could do today to kind of improve their communication and maybe show a little bit of that empathy skill?
I think that's a great idea. And I truly believe, because it's how I got started myself in regards to building these skills, start using people's names. It is the easiest first step that you can take in regards to adding these skills to your tool belt. And as you use that skill, you will see immediately a shift in your day-to-day if it's not something you were previously focused on. That reinforcement will be the motivating factor to get you to add more skills to your belt. So start using their names.
Yeah. I love it for a couple of reasons. One, I can't remember names. I don't know what's wrong with me. Well, I do know what's wrong. I'm old. But also, it's interesting. I can remember the songs growing up in the 80s, but I can't remember like a client's name. I can remember, I know many can agree with me, I can remember the pet's names better than the owner's name. But that's a good homework assignment for me to work on as well, because it really does hone in that personalized relationship. It makes it a better experience all around. So I love that you talk about like their name, because it does, you know, bring it all in nicely. So
and don't feel like you have to remember it either, right? Like, to say, like, I want you to, if that's gonna help out. But I'm also realistic in that I work in, you know, the city. You're in Jersey. Like, we have hundreds of clients, right?
Yeah.
Like that's a really hard thing to do. But we have electronic medical records. You have a paper chart in front of you if you were using those right now. There's just so many resources for you to be able to do that. Just ask them. Just ask them.
Well, how often, to the listeners that tuning in and you make a mistake when you accidentally thought it was a boy and it's a girl, and the look that you get, right? From that point, it's a great example of how that sets a precedence for the entire visit, because it shows your lack of attention to detail and the fact that they don't, you're just being another number to them. And so I know, like, practice management software systems, thank gosh, they have like blue and pink, you know, so you can just really look quickly and be like, so how long has she been vomiting for you? Because sometimes you forget.
Right.
And it's such a good example, like you said, when you're saying the name, also like if it's a boy or a girl, because using the like the those right pronouns for the for their pets are so important to them.
Yep. Absolutely. And I love the color coding systems. I think those are great too. Whatever you can do to build that connection, I try at least two or three times to include that pet parent's name in our consults.
I love that. You heard it first here, listeners. So you all have a homework assignment is to start using the pet parent's name, building a relationship. One other thing I got to add, by the way, because I see this in new graduates, and I know it's not an easy skill to do, but reach out your hand and handshake, you know,
Yes.
and nice to meet you, Adam. Nice to meet you, Susan. You know, and petting the animal, of course, if they're friendly, but just like extending that bedside manner goes a long way, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are people too. Hi,
Yeah.
nice to meet you. We're all people in this room and we all deserve to be treated with the same respect. And that right there shows that you're viewing it that way. That physical contact shows that you're on the same
Yes.
level. Goes to there's other aspects too with like what level you're at when you're talking to them and like is there a desk between you and the client? There's so many different ways that you can, you know, analyze it, but I absolutely agree with you. Being able to have that approach is very, very important.
Love it. Well, Dr. Josh, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show. Share with the listeners where we can follow you and learn more about you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being here today. You guys can follow me on Instagram. That's Dr. Josh, DoctorJosh, as well as TikTok. And you can find me at drjosh.com. Please feel free to email me or DM me. My email is josh@drjosh.com. I love talking about clinical empathy. I love hearing from different clinics, different veterinarians, vet nurses, hospital managers. I want to make veterinary medicine a better place for us and pet parents alike. Talk to me about what you have going on.
You heard it here, everyone. Dr. Johns, thanks for being on here. Always good to see you. And oh, by the way, really quick, listeners, too, he's got this really cool drone. And so, like, this
Oh,
is
that's a
how
good
he
point. It
films,
is very cool.
right? It's really cool. And I love it. It's a vibe, it's your brand. I mean, I could talk about brand building all till the cows come home, but I just think it's a really cool thing. And you got to check out his videos because it's just really well done. Bravo.
Thank you
Excellent.
so much. I love walking around New York City and having my drone over my shoulder.
Yes, it's the best. Love it.
You so much.
Thanks for being here. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to do awesome things here. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.